And right now, I do believe it's time to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Of course, Arthur joins us on a Monday morning. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning. Is it going to snow there today?
We're meant to get, right now, as a matter of fact.
To the Weather Channel, you're going to get up to 6 inches.
Now, my Army meteorologist, it's snowing right now, it just started, said we should get in the Sharon area around 2 to 3 inches. And then as you go further north and northwest, they might get 6 to 7 inches of snow. But in the Sharon area, our meteorologist is sticking to the fact that.
Well, three inches is pretty.
It'll be
gone next week.
It would be labeled one of the top three storms of our winter, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that funny?
Right.
I don't want to get into that. My nephew is obsessed with the coronavirus and its relation to global warming. But I don't want to go there. Where I'm going is the supermarket. And around here in Brooklyn, I would say the streets are pretty quiet. I do go out. I live on a park where I hear inside the park is pretty crowded, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But around the edges of the park where I live, there's nobody. So, you know, you're safe to take a walk, an exercise walk, which is what I do. But as you can imagine, I'm otherwise cooking. Now, I will run out of food. Well, I won't run out of food, but the fresh stuff will be gone by tomorrow night, I'm thinking, because I got to use up stuff. I stocked up. I had a horrendous, horrendous supermarket experience where no one was paying any attention to social distancing. And, in fact, there was gridlock around the appetizing department, not, I don't know what you call it, the delicatessen department, and prepared foods, which I don't buy. And I actually had to make a two-aisle detour just to get to the meat cases. There was absolutely no chicken. I never knew that supermarket carried so many bones, and I would have bought up all their bones and made a bone broth. Except they were still $3.99 a pound. I don't know why they weren't, you know, being discounted at this point. Any meat manager would see, well, the bones aren't selling. Nobody's hoarding bones. And all the processed meats were there, hot dogs, various kinds of, you know, sausage. For some reason, they were all there. And this was the day after. This must have been Wednesday, the day after St. Patrick's Day, and strangely, nobody bought corned beef. I don't know where all the Irish shoppers were. Not Irish shoppers, but why weren't they buying corned beef? I think I noted last week that my market had heaps of the thick cut, top cut, whatever you want to call it, the fattier cut, the coarser grained top of the brisket. It's hard to find that during the year. Only on St. Patrick's Day do you see cases full of it. Well, the day after St. Patrick's Day, not only was the case still full of it, but it was marked down to $1.99 a pound.
I just want to interrupt here that I made corned beef for St. Patrick's Day, and Jill doesn't like to eat meat a lot, and I brought it in, and she said, she came to me, she said, "That's the best corned beef you've ever made."
There you go.
It came out unbelievable.
Ours was sublime when we ate it right out of the pot. It was about a 4.5-pound piece of meat, took about 4 hours to cook. Until it was fork tender. You know, you can overcook, overboil corned beef. So that's about 50 minutes a pound, maybe 55 minutes a pound. I keep mine at the absolute minimal simmer. You bring it to a boil, and you say, anyway, had the corned beef, and of course I made the corned beef hash, as I said I would. But the supermarket was weird. Before I got there, a friend said, "Well, if you see any garlic, buy it, because my supermarket is out of garlic." Sure enough, my supermarket was out of garlic, and another supermarket I went to was out of garlic. The, sh- there was not a bean. This is my biggest supermarket, the biggest supermarket in Park Slope. It's a Key Food with a parking lot. So it's popular with those of us who have cars. And you can carry away a lot of packages that you don't have to actually carry them home. Anyway, not a bean in sight, not a dry bean or a can of beans. But strangely, the rice shelf was full. You would think that people buying all these beans would come up with some rice, too. I think it must have been coincidentally, but Melissa Clark did a major feature on beans last week in the New York Times. And there I go to the supermarket. If I wanted to make any of Melissa's recipes, I could not because there were no beans. Strangely, the pasta aisle was hit, I think, strangely. I mean, it's not strangely, but a sign of the times where pasta is selling better than rice. But the pasta shelves were rather depleted. There was no bread. There was no chicken. Did I say that? Not
yes.
A chicken. The manager of the store, who I had a little tiff with, but anyway, he was, while the tiff happened while I was waiting for chicken thighs to come out. He said, "Oh, well, you like chicken thighs?" I said, "I sure do." "Well, wait a minute and we'll give you chicken thighs." Well, it was way more than a minute and I gave up on the chicken thighs. But anyway, they no eggs. So that's understandable, I think. Like no garlic I didn't get.
Yeah.
And, you know, it goes like that. Now, well,
it's interesting,
even
Arthur,
though my supermarket people I didn't think either the staff or the customers were being cautious. I go to my fancy supermarket around the corner called Union Market. They have one on the Lower East Side, but otherwise it's all in Brooklyn and in Cobble Hill and two in Park Slope, three in Park Slope. Now that I think of it, anyway, it's a very, very nice market, not cheap. But some items are totally normal supermarket prices. There, everybody was so cautious that the checkout line, which truly wasn't very long, went from the front of the store to, I should say, not many people, went from the front of the store to the back of the store because everybody was standing 6 feet apart. So that's the way it's supposed to go.
It's interesting because the same thing happened up here. I went to a supermarket and everybody was 6 feet apart. One supermarket didn't have chicken I wanted, and they didn't have bok choy. As the guy looked at me and said, "What do you want, bok choy?" So I said, "Yeah." Well, but then I went to another supermarket that did have bok choy, and then the next day I went back and I got my chicken from where I normally get it. But it was funny. He looked at me. "You want bok choy?"
Well, in the produce the big supermarket, the produce department was reasonably well stocked still. And the only thing I saw that was depleted, because I knew it was depleted because I got one of the last two packages, everything's wrapped in plastic, of course, of zucchini, because they looked really good. They were not too big. Sometimes there's some early zucchini around that could be really good. I haven't cooked it yet. It's still in the fridge. Anyway, it's a hardship, of course. Then again, you have to be a little creative, inventive, and I'm going to plug myself here. I wrote a book while I was living in West Cornwall called What to Cook When You Think There's Nothing in the House to Eat. This is the time to pull out your copy. And, of course, there are a lot of bean recipes, and there are a lot of pasta recipes. And I said to Bob, if we run out of fresh food, I have some frozen spinach and peas in the house, and we always have pasta and canned tomato. Oh, canned tomato! So my friend who lives in Gainesville, Florida, reported to me yesterday that you can't find a canned tomato in Gainesville, Florida. So it's interesting what's missing from the shelves. You know, the toilet paper thing was a mystery, and people now can make a lot of jokes about it. If you run out, I don't know what's wrong with regular tissues if you run out of toilet paper. Anyway, as usual, as is my personality, I crave something I can't have. At Passover, I always, when I was a kid and almost every delicatessen was kosher and closed for Passover, I craved pastrami on rye. I really did. I mean, the day after Passover, I was at the deli because for 8 days I had wanted pastrami on rye. Now it's the ricotta pancakes that they serve at the restaurant around the corner from me on Flatbush Avenue. It's a fancy, trendy kind of place, and I've looked at the dinner menu many times and said, you know, there's nothing I want to eat here. But we went for brunch as a family some months ago, meaning my nephew and his kids and wife with us, and we had this sensational French toast. Of course, little kids love French toast. Well, at least these little kids love French toast, because I have to say their mother, Michelle, makes some of the best French toast ever, except for this French toast. And they make ricotta pancakes. Now, I've gone back for both of those things twice. And encouraged by these two dishes, I actually went to dinner, even though there was nothing on the menu I really wanted to eat. And it was extremely disappointing. That's all I'll say about dinner. But the ricotta pancakes, you know, are stuck. So yesterday I bought some ricotta when I was in the supermarket. I figured that's a good thing to keep in the house. It'll keep for a while, at least a week. And I can do a lot of things with a big container of ricotta. And I made ricotta pancakes yesterday.
Mm.
And they were really easy. If you go online and you look up ricotta pancakes, you're going to find, I don't know, probably dozens of recipes. The ones that I made are more or less my creation, only in the sense that I adjusted the proportions a little bit. But let me just tell you. They come out very creamy, but I could make them even more creamy in the middle if I added a little bit more less flour. So let me start by saying we like the ones that I made, but I'm going to be playing with this recipe a bit. One of the things I did do yesterday when I made them is I tried making small ones, meaning I used a half a cup to measure out the batter for each pancake. And in my big skillet, my big no-stick skillet, but I use butter to cook them with. I'm not sure if they'll not stick to my non-stick. I wanted the flavor of the butter. There is no fat inside the pancakes except for the egg and ricotta. So anyway, that would make three sizable, big, fluffy pancakes. And then I had two pans full. And then I had enough batter to make probably two more, but I decided instead to make one big one as they serve it at this restaurant around. Fausto is the name of the restaurant, Fausto. And they're plate size ricotta pancakes. I can't say mine were as good as Fausto. That's why I'm going to continue to play with this recipe. But these were good enough. A cup of ricotta, a cup of flour, of all-purpose flour, which I always measure by spooning into the cup and then leveling it off. These are the dry ingredients. Well, they're not the dry ingredients. Let me start with a cup of ricotta is not a dry ingredient. The dry ingredients are one cup of flour, a half teaspoon of baking powder. I'm going to make it next time with 2 tablespoons of sugar, granulated sugar. This time I made it with 1.5. I think they could be a tad sweeter. So I'm going to use 2 tablespoons of sugar next time. 1/4 teaspoon of salt. 3/4 of a cup of whole milk. There was no option for me. I only have whole milk in the house. 3 large eggs separated. Now we're down into the liquid ingredients, which would be 1 cup of ricotta, 3/4 of a cup of milk, 2 large eggs. Put the yolks in with the milk and the ricotta. Keep the whites separate. You're going to beat them. Did I say 2? I meant 3 large eggs. And the other liquid ingredient is 1/2 teaspoon. I had a sloppy 1/2 teaspoon of vanilla extract. Got to say, a friend of mine makes his own vanilla extract. I never had it until now, but he just came in the mail, and I decided, wow, and it was wow, this vanilla extract. So you just beat up the wet ingredients, the ricotta, the 3 egg yolks, the 3/4 of a cup of milk, the 1/2 teaspoon of vanilla, and you mix the dry ingredients, a cup of flour, 1/2 teaspoon of baking powder, 2 tablespoons of sugar, 1/4 teaspoon of salt. Keep those separate. Now beat your 3 egg whites, which you've kept aside, until they're firm peaks. I used to love doing this in cooking classes because it was like a magic trick, but it isn't. If your whites are at the perfect stiff stage, you can turn the bowl upside down and they won't fall out. Now, that sounds dangerous, but it isn't, because if you tip the bowl and they move at all, you put the beaters back in and beat another couple of seconds probably at that point. But that's my trick. So fold in the egg whites. Now, I found the hard, and that's it. You have a smooth batter with egg whites folded in carefully with a nice wide spatula. But I found the only difficult part of this ricotta pancakes was figuring out what temperature the pan should be. So, as I said, I used my largest nonstick pan, and next time I'm going to try doing it without any fat in the pan. But I put in a bare minimum tablespoon of butter in this large pan. And when it started to sizzle is when I dropped in the batter. And I cooked the first side for about 3 minutes. And then I flipped them over and cooked for another 2 minutes. There will be bubbles popping through the pancakes after the first 3 minutes. If they pop up immediately, you know your heat is too high. If they aren't popping up at 3 minutes, then you know your heat's been too low. And you can adjust accordingly and flip the pancakes. I find, by the way, that this takes 2 utensils if you want to do it without being sloppy, because the top part is still a little runny. So I flip with the flipper and use a spatula on the other side to make sure that they don't get sloppy. And that's it. A couple minutes on the other side and eat. Eat immediately. I eat them plain.
I was going to say, you wouldn't, with the ricotta, you wouldn't need, maybe put a little bit of piece of butter on top.
Bob put maple syrup on it.
Really? Wouldn't that make
yes,
it too
he
sweet?
Yes, did. And I had my last couple bites with maple syrup, and I'm not complaining.
Okay.
No, the ricotta is subtle. It's there, and, you know, by the way, Bob ate them with butter and syrup.
It's funny. You mentioned ricotta being subtle. My grandmother, when she would open up things of ricotta, and I was a kid, people wonder why I'm heavy. I would eat spoonfuls of just the ricotta.
You know, ricotta, the word means recooked. And technically speaking, it's not cheese. It's a dairy product, but it's not cheese. There's no fermentation, no blah, blah, blah. What it is after, well, this is the traditional method. After making cheese, the whey, the watery part left over, you know, it becomes curds and whey, and the curds are made into cheese, and then the whey still has some protein and fat. So if you recook it, bring it to a boil with a little bit of acid added, you will get little beads of protein coming to the surface. And as they come to the surface, this is ricotta, recooked, you put them into a basket or a strainer, depends, and let them drain, and that's the ricotta. Now, sometimes cream is added, and there are other things that can be added, but that's basically all it is recooked whey. Anyway, so speaking of what to cook, you know, I wrote a book, What to Cook When You Think There's Nothing in the House to Eat. I'll say it again. What to Cook When You Think There's Nothing. You know what? You could buy the book, but I won't make a penny from it. So, but if you have it somewhere in the house, you might want to look it up, because this is the moment you may need it. You know, you want to drain, not drain the swamp, but drain the cupboards. It's a good time to use up all those things that you keep meaning to use, but don't. Empty the freezer, because most things after 3 months should not be kept frozen. So start emptying out your freezer. You know, all the perishable things should be eaten immediately or made into soup. I made some soup with, you know, clean out the vegetables. I had bought some fresh vegetables, so I used the older vegetables, and I made some vegetable soup, and it's in the freezer. So you know, if you go to the supermarket, make it less frequently. I mean, the less frequently you go out, the less likely you are to catch the virus. So I'm going to make something myself today from my book, What to Cook. Something I must have seen this on TV, but somebody, it's a visual thing for me, made lemon sponge, what I call lemon sponge pudding. I don't know what whoever it was on TV called it, but it's one of those magical cake things, dessert things. You make this batter and fold in egg whites and bake it in the oven. And when it comes out, you've got pudding on the bottom and this meringue, cakey kind of thing on top. Is very good. And I one of the places I shop is right on my corner, right by the subway station. I don't know who is in the subway now, by the way. Somebody asked me yesterday, do you know what's going on in the subways? I do not. But I do know that the fruit man, I call him the last day of sale fruit man, because you... First of all, he doesn't let people feel up the fruit. So in that way, it's safer than in the supermarket, where I see everybody's feeling up the fruit still, even though they're not wearing gloves. And it's good for bananas. The last day of sale fruit man is very good for bananas, because if you go to the supermarket for bananas, they're green. His are yellow. They're not dotted yet, you know, they're not spotted yet, but they're yellow. Or almost altogether yellow. So I bought a lot of lemons from him the other day, and I'm going to make lemon sponge pudding. And it's a quickie recipe. Two eggs separated, because, of course, you're going to fold in the whites at the end. So two egg yolks, beat with 3/4 cup of sugar until it's nice and light and thick. Add a 1/4 cup of lemon juice. If you don't have a 1/4 cup, it could be a scant 1/4 cup of lemon juice, but lemony. And I hope the teaspoon, a teaspoon of grated lemon zest, and a tablespoon of melted butter. And you mix that all up together, and you blend in 1/4 cup of flour and 1 cup of milk, and you've got a smooth batter, and beat your egg whites, as I mentioned before, until they're stiff, and fold them into the batter, and then pour that into an ungreased, I repeat, ungreased 8-inch square baking dish, and bake this in a bain-marie, in Mary's bath. Bake the smaller pan of batter in a larger pan of hot water. I like to bring the water to a boil on top of the stove. And then pour it into the outer pan while the inner pan is in place, and bring that up as far as you can safely go and bake it off for, well, this is at 350 degrees. It's going to take 45 minutes. It's a long haul here. And you got to let it cool before you eat it. But on the other hand, it's best warm or hot. So if you're in the house all day, this can be your reward this afternoon. You can, in fact, make the batter ahead and fold the egg whites in at the last minute and then put it in the oven. And then you can, you know, an hour later, you're eating warm lemon pudding with meringue top. I'm making myself hungry.
That sounds good to me, yeah. That's the great thing about growing up with Hungarian grandmothers and her sisters. there was always something nice.
So tomorrow is my birthday.
Hey, happy birthday.
Thank you. And I'm only saying this on the radio because I, for a change, made a restaurant reservation for my birthday. And, of course, I was going to this place solely for their steak for two. And I happened to know what piece of meat this restaurant buys. So now that I can't go to the restaurant, I have actually ordered the steak. And here, I think, I don't know if as far as Sharon, but you can get next day delivery. And it's called DeBraga, DeBraga, and DeBraga is a very old and very it's a venerated commercial butcher. I should say he. I don't want to tell the whole DeBraga story, but DeBraga for $10 is delivering me two steaks. I think it's it was my birthday. I didn't really care about the price. But I think it's like $180 for my two 28-ounce Côte de Bœuf. And the Côte de Bœuf is a rib steak, but this is a super thick rib steak. And in a restaurant, it's often the steak for two. So anyway, I'll tell you next week how this turned out. I'm going to have to cook my own steak. But I can do that.
All right.
Yeah. Well. And DeBraga. So if you're looking for great meat, check them out online. There's a whole, the whole store is right there online. And retail with DeBraga is only fairly recent. It's so I'm sure they need the business because their main customers are restaurants, the high end restaurants.
All right. Well, I want you to have a happy...
Well, I'm off to do lemon pudding.
Do lemon pudding, and I want you to have a happy birthday tomorrow.
Thank you. Take care, everybody.
And
stay healthy.
We'll speak to you next week, Arthur. Take care.
Bye.
That is Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Of course, you can find him online at robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on Arthur Schwartz, the food maven.